All right, gotta get this show done really quick. It's the news. What do you mean? Folks, it is good morning. It is Friday. It's Friday already. Friday, August 14th, 8:23 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am your host this morning. It is 2026 is the year, and I am here to tell you that we have, yesterday was quite the day. Today's going to be quite another day. It's not going to be the day I thought it was going to be. It's going to be a mess, actually. I was supposed to be in Norfolk, Virginia last night, and I was supposed to be there most of the day today. And in fact, as it turns out, I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, and I'm going to be leaving here. I got in here kind of late last night. I'm going to be leaving here around noonish today, heading back to Chicago. I'm going to end up in Champaign, Illinois tonight. But I don't think that's going to happen. There's a whole lot of weather moving into the Chicago area again, and most of the weather is between Chicago and Champaign. And I just don't see this happening in a real-time scenario in terms of the way they want to schedule me to be able to get there and then come back tomorrow, coming back from Champaign tomorrow. I'll be spending the day in the weekend, I should say, Saturday night in Chicago. However, I'm probably going to go to the boat unless they do something else with me. I'm assuming something else is going to happen before this is all over with. I will probably end up in Tucumcari, wherever that is, New Mexico, something. Who knows where I'm going to end up being? I'll probably end up in Yuma or Cucamonga. Who knows where I'm going to end up? This is going to be a crazy day. Weather is crazy, and all kinds of things are happening crazy. Anyway, I'm in Baltimore, Maryland right now. And, it's crazy times. We have a little bit of a show for you today, some financial stuff. We'll see what the bots have for us for questions, probably things that I will not even understand or know. They're always asking me questions about stuff I have not even had a clue on. We have seem to be a lot of Teslas out in the parking lot. I'm not sure what's going on with that. I just happened to notice it. I'm looking out in the parking lot. I didn't notice one here pulled up last night when I was pulling. Anyway, I got my chai here. Got a big fat cup of chai here with some artificial creamer in it. And then I've got my backup cup is actually my thermos. And it still has some very good, sweet peach tea. That's the peach flavor is really coming through well. These peaches are just incredible. So I got this, that's in my thermos. I don't have much of that left. I was going to go to there's a Chick-fil-A not too far from here, I think. It's about a 15-minute walk, but I'm not sure I'm going to make it before I have to catch my van to the airport. So I've got to get this show done quickly. If I get the show done quickly enough, I can get to Chick-fil-A and get myself some sweet tea, but I don't think that's going to happen. There's actually a Chick-fil-A in the airport here in Baltimore. I might just wait till I get there and get myself some sweet tea there. I have, that's probably what I'm going to have to do because I have a feeling that I'm going to be delayed even trying to get to Chicago from Baltimore. I have the feeling that flight's going to be delayed. Chicago's going to probably go into a ground stop or something at some point, and there's going to be delays after that. Of course, that's going to change everything in the rest of my day. But in the meantime, I was kind of hoping to have a nice long day to get some stuff done today, and then tomorrow, all day tomorrow, I was going to be in El Paso, and I was going to get some things done there. I was hoping to get a whole lot of work done on the computer, just a lot of office stuff type done, just being, not doing so much traveling around. Now, that's the way it's working out now, I'm traveling around a lot. Anyway, right after this little quick message, we're going to have, starting into the show, we'll just jump right into the bots and get going, right? Because I'll just keep rambling. If you give me a chance, I'll just keep rambling all day long. That's just kind of, I can't turn myself off that way. The mouth starts flowing. It's like something else. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. We have Yeah, listen to this and we'll be right back.
Welcome to the news, according to me. Pull up a chair, I'll share what I believe. I've done my reading, I've got thoughts or two. But I'm not your doctor, so don't go blaming you know who. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer. I'm definitely not your financial advisor. These are my opinions, not the gospel truth. Entertainment only, baby. That's the news, the news according to me and me alone. Now let's get started.
All right, we're
welcome to
that's,
the
yeah,
show.
That's the truth of that. We have let's just jump right into the callers. I don't know where I'm going to start here. I think I've got a random thing. Usually I like to see who lights up when I start to talk about anything. Today's Financial Friday. We have a lot of questions about finances, a lot of things happening in the world financially and just in terms of in general. But we're going to kind of check in. Oh, I can lower my seat. I'm all hunched over here at this desk trying to talk into this microphone. And I just realized I could lower my chair. I didn't even think about it. I've just been sitting here. So that's my posture is much better now. We have, I'm sure you were concerned about that. Yeah. None of the callers are lighting up, which it just kind of, usually one of them will light up if I'm talking about a particular subject. We got everything from, the war going on. We have all kinds of things happening with the numbers in terms of inflation, some of those kinds of things. Nobody's lighting up. Nobody's lighting up at all. I'm just going to start from the top here. I'm just going to go to Artie. We're just going to talk to Artie and see what he has to say. And,
Hey, Kevin,
long-time
listener here.
I know you.
I've been digging into the July producer price index data that just dropped showing zero inflation. But when I break down the numbers, I'm seeing AI infrastructure costs shifting from semiconductor chips to construction materials. Yeah. Can you walk us through what's really happening with the supply chain dynamics here and whether this construction inflation spike is going to derail the Fed's soft landing?
Short answer, no. It will not derail the soft landing. Consumer good stuff like this, building materials, those kinds of things. It has a strange effect on the economy. It doesn't quite have the same effect that you think that some things should. And this shift from this is a spike. Now, my understanding is they're going to build. I can't remember how. I think we have like 5,500 or 5,000 data centers in the country right now. I think the goal, I believe, is to increase that by about another three times or four times, maybe more than that. Maybe it's 50,000 they want to have. 50,000, that doesn't make any sense. That'd be, that's 1,000 data centers in every state. I don't see how that's going to be possible. We have, I don't know. There's different sizes of data centers. There's the micro data centers that are kind of operate as a small relay network, and then there's the larger data centers that are massive. They're four square miles or something ridiculous in size. So we have there's big difference in terms of the way the data centers are built. So that's when you just say data center, it doesn't necessarily mean that much. Now. Once the data centers are pretty much up and built, it's going to be a short term thing. When I say short term, I mean within for 3 or 4 years. They're talking about 2030 having these data centers all up and running. There will be a climax to that. In other words, it's going to be at some point there's a curve when they have the data centers built and there's not going to be they're not going to be the increase in numbers in the country in this country anyway that we see. Right now, they're rapidly trying to get these things built, and they're finding new ways to get them all built quicker, learning as they go, as it is. And so, in terms of the inflation numbers, I think that is a spike. Now, my understanding is we almost had zero inflation last month. I'm not sure exactly what the real numbers are. It has really curbed off. Now, I'm hoping for some deflation. It can be done. Without causing issues with stock market price. If the stock market stays stable and we have things, and the value of the dollar can actually go up, Nixon was able to do it, and I don't know of any other president who has, in at least in my lifetime, been able to take us through a deflationary time when there was actual economic stability. But it's a rare occurrence, and I think but it can be done. So we'll see if that's going to happen this time. I think that with the infrastructure, everything that's happening with building, the investment that's coming into this country, with regard to the trillions of dollars that are coming in from outside the country, with infrastructure and development, I think we may be seeing one of those moments when there's a huge shift in terms of our automation, technology, everything else that's happening. It's all built on it's like a guy spinning plates. I'm going to see what he says about that. It's like the old Ed Sullivan show when you got the guy spinning plates. You got to keep the plates, got to keep the plates spinning, or they fall off the pole. It's kind of one of those deals. That's kind of how I see it. That's my take, I guess I should say. Go ahead. While I sip.
Actually, You're right to distinguish between micro and hyperscale data centers.
Yeah, of course I am.
They operate completely differently, so lumping them together distorts the real build-out picture.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, the 50,000 figure probably includes edge nodes and smaller distributed compute, not just the massive facilities, which is why that per-state math doesn't hold up. The real constraint is going to be power infrastructure and cooling capacity, not physical space. The deflation angle is interesting, though. If we're front-loading all this CapEx spending without consumer price pressure downstream, you could theoretically get that soft landing you mentioned, but it requires that demand curve you're describing to actually flatten out once the build phase peaks.
Mm-hmm. I'm obviously on somebody else's internet because this is actually that was actually a real answer. He didn't just mirror everything I said. I'm curious, Artie, do you know if most of the cooling systems on the larger data centers, are the cooling systems themselves enclosed? Do they just simply dump their cooling water out all the time? I'm hearing a lot of speculative ideas on this kind of stuff, that they somehow are some kind of ecological disaster because they're going to pollute the water. They're going to do all kinds of things with the water structure because they're draining the aquifer and they're using all this water every day to cool. They're pumping millions of gallons of water a day to cool these things down. My understanding is the systems are closed and they don't really change those coolants out. It's kind of like the coolant on your car. It could run for several years, theoretically, without having to be flushed and changed. Is that your understanding, or am I not understanding how these cooling systems work? What's your take on that? Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, the major hyperscale data centers are running closed-loop systems, basically like your car's cooling system. The coolant cycles through and doesn't get dumped. But here's where it gets technical.
Okay.
They still need massive amounts of water for the heat exchangers and evaporative cooling towers.
Yeah.
So even a closed loop still pulls water from local aquifers. And in water-stressed regions, that's actually a real problem, not speculative. The ecological concern isn't so much pollution as it is depletion. Places like Arizona and Texas are literally competing with communities for groundwater to cool these things. So saying it's closed doesn't really address the actual bottleneck we're going to hit.
Yeah, I guess I would retort that with the idea that you could ship water in, and if it's only going to be used, on that one basis, and it doesn't have to be purified, drinking water. It could be, it has to be clean water, but not. It wouldn't have to be the kind of water that we would think of as in terms of, the pure groundwater that we're pulling out. So I would think that, with the water that can be shipped in to make that happen, and then, maybe changing it once a year, you got time to get, storage tanks, whatever you could do, gradually kind of bring more water in all the time. That water actually is going to then go into, it's kind of a, because there's plenty of water, folks. By the way, it's just not in the right places. Places where people are living right now, there's places that don't have water that have traditionally not had water. So it's not. It's just that people are living now in areas that occasionally they have to ship water in or have some kind of reservoir systems or whatever they've got in place. And of course, then that becomes political and who owns that water, who gets the water. They do all kinds of weird stuff with that. Let's talk to Leonard. I'm just going to go down the list. Let's go to Chloe. We'll get a female perspective here real quick. Go ahead, Chloe.
Hey there, Kevin. So I was scrolling and saw that, like, China is literally sending scientists to Iran to dig up rare earth metals. That's like super random, but also kind of scary. I thought we needed those for like our phones and electric cars and stuff. Should we be worried that China and Iran are teaming up on this? Or am I just being paranoid?
No, there's some legitimate paranoia here. That we there's one of the things that we don't hear about at all. It is very, China has been very quiet in the background, going to a lot of countries in Africa and South America. I know that they've had a very strong presence in Peru right now. They're bringing in a lot of money, a lot of infrastructure, a lot of engineers doing a lot of things. They want raw materials, and they're looking for them everywhere. They will do anything to get them. I got a friend that used to live in Peru. He said that China is all over Peru, doing some things. And it's, he said they, but they're, I've heard that from other countries as well. Other people that have visited other countries and gone to other countries. There's definitely a movement afoot from China. Now, part of that is because industrial demand, and they do export a lot of stuff, and they. So, you know, they're building batteries, they're doing all this stuff that they're, you know, that we buy from them. So it's not really just them consuming it for themselves. It is their, you know, but it is their part of their industrial engine. And they are going to these countries and making deals with them. And you have to kind of wonder. Now, Iran, what amazes me is some of these countries, they'll sell their raw materials. This is, you know, even in the early time of our country here, when the first settlers came here and we started to, you know, they started to expand the new world as it was, they had these trade agreements with England, where they would, you know, they would chop down trees, they would, you know, ship these trees over to the lumber over to London, and then they would buy back the lumber in the shape of things built. So they would send raw materials like crazy, because there were so many, you know, there's just raw materials here like crazy. They would send a lot of these raw materials off to England and to Europe and other countries as well, but mostly to Europe. And then they would buy things built in Europe with those raw materials. You cannot sustain your country that way. That you have to start doing some building of your own. You have to start your own economic. You have to be more vertically integrated. In other words, it's not something you can just continue to do. Say you owned a plot of land with 7 acres or 8, 10 acres or whatever you've got, and you start selling off the trees that are on your property, and then you buy furniture for your house, and then you sell off more to trade for food, or you sell off more to trade for something else, or whatever it is you're doing, and you continue to do that. Maybe you've got some kind of, you know, you've got a pond, so you sell the water out of it. You've got a certain kind of dirt that some people like for their garden, and you start to sell that off. You know, it's all great and good till you realize, hey, maybe we should be planting our own garden. Maybe we should be, you know, putting fish on our own pond. Maybe we should be making our own furniture from the trees that are growing here, and not just selling everything off the, you know, just stripping the ground. This happens in a lot of countries. It especially happens in third world countries where they haven't industrialized yet. So some industrialized country comes in and doesn't take them. They might buy them. They'll probably pay for them. But still, you're still coming in and ravaging that particular landscape, and it's taking opportunity from those countries. They're selling themselves short. In other words, they're not looking at the long game. They're looking at the current, you know, potential right now kind of economic. What's amazing to me is there's a lot of Saudi Arabian countries. There's a lot of Middle Eastern countries and regions that pump all kinds of oil that have no refineries. It blows my mind. They're not doing any refining of their own. They're actually buying fuel. Some of them buy fuel from other countries after they sell them the oil. It's not an economic, and we don't want to get into that situation in this country. We want to make sure that we're not doing that. But there's been a correction in that regard to some degree. But now we're kind of doing that with China, or at least we did for a short period of time. I think it's kind of curbed now a little bit. Tariffs are supposed to balance that to some degree. So if they want to sell their products here, but they have to pay a tariff, and so that we get back some of that. Tariffs are the great equalizer if they're done properly. And of course, now we end up having to pay more for that, but it has a stabilizing effect. So it's kind of an interesting concept. I think Bessent has done a good job with that part of things. But so yeah, I think that it is kind of it's alarming. It's a little bit of a concern because there can be some, you know, what other arrangements, what other agreements, what kind of transactions and agreements do they have going on in the background in order for these raw materials to be, you know, what kind of deals they have going on to get these raw materials with somebody who is because China has nukes. So what is the deal going on there? We have to look at that kind of thing when things start to get, when rare earth materials they're rare. That's why, you know, so it's be an interesting thing to see how they pull it all off. But that's my take on it.
Okay, so you're basically saying countries are getting trapped in this extraction economy where they're selling their natural wealth for cheap and then buying back finished products at markup, which is literally just colonial economics with a modern coat of paint, right? China's playing that game way smarter than anyone else. They're in Africa, South America, everywhere locking down deals while we're sleeping on it.
Yeah.
The scary part isn't even the rare earths or the materials themselves. It's what leverage China gets when they own the relationships and the supply chains. Like, they're building actual infrastructure and goodwill while we're just tariffing people and hoping it works out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, yeah. And again, you know, the relationships that they're having with these countries is really what we should be concerned about, because they're establishing a relationship with them that we don't have. And when it comes down to, you know, are we going to bomb you? Probably not, if we're friends with you, kind of thing. So there's some concern there, in my opinion, but we'll just stay with that. Let's go with, I'm going to talk to Elena. I just feel like talking to Elena. Go ahead, Elena.
Good morning, Kevin.
Yes, hello.
I'm struck by the parallels between today's AI infrastructure boom and the railroad expansion of the 1860s.
I think we talked
about
this.
Both eras saw initial equipment costs drop, while construction and land acquisition expenses exploded.
Yeah.
History shows these build-out phases often precede financial panics when speculation outpaces actual utility.
Yeah.
Are we heading toward another 1873-style crisis, just with data centers instead of railroads?
Well, it's a complicated question. It's a good question, but it's complicated. I think that's a valid parallel to make. The issue that you get into with some of this is how we are. I definitely see that shift as well. Now that you bring it up, there's definitely been a shift of resources in terms of land acquisition, those kinds of things, and the parallels that are happening there. The more they build the data centers, the more efficient they become at it. And of course, there's companies that are, you know, just like in the gold rush, it wasn't the people who were mining for gold that made all the money. It was the people who were selling picks and shovels. The people who are building these data centers are the companies that are really just raking it in right now. They're the ones who are behind all this, and they of course want to become more efficient. They want to be able to do things faster. They want to be able to do things more inexpensively. They're trying to cut costs. They're trying to increase their profits, of course, because they want to make, you know, if they can charge $1 billion for a data center and they can make, you know, $500 million doing it, or if they can make, you know, $750 million doing it, they're gonna try to make $750 million. They're not gonna, you know, hopefully with the integrity in mind. But the everything becomes more efficient as they're working. Hopefully, if they're using AI, it may or may not be. But they're that is part of the issue. So it's a normal kind of a plateau that they reach in terms of costs and expenses and you know, not just throwing money at a problem. They can now actually take the time to work at a problem. at the same time, you do have the issue of, you know, other things becoming more important, like, because there's only so much land out there, and the more they acquire, the more, you know, in certain areas it's going to be even more than others, and of course the more they buy up, the more scarce it becomes, and the higher the price is going to go. So and now people are a little bit more concerned about having a data center in their backyard. It's the whole NIMBY effect of, you know, yeah, we want just like wanting windmills, but we don't want them in our backyard kind of thing. We don't, people are all about it until it becomes an issue where it's, they have to look out their window and see a data center in their backyard. So it's one of those things where so the prices go up, like, you know, when they find out that, you know, data centers coming in, that they kind of do that kind of thing. I think there's a parallel there. And it's valid. Probably it's a valid concern. What are we going to do about it? I don't know.
I appreciate the gold rush analogy. It really does echo what we saw in the 1800s, mm-hmm. where the infrastructure builders made more than the miners themselves. Mm-hmm. But here's what worries me. Mm-hmm. Back then, land was AI seemingly infinite, and people could move west. Now we're watching finite water resources and prime real estate get locked up by corporations with deep pockets, and there's no frontier left to escape to. The NIMBY problem you're describing isn't just psychology. It's people realizing too late that once these facilities claim the land and water, that choice is gone permanently for their communities.
Yeah. Yeah. We've already talked about the water thing and the land thing. Here's the one thing that I think we tend to miss when we talk about this stuff. When the data centers go up, they probably are not going to get any larger. And as they're building them, they're chip technology is increasing, data, you know, abilities are increasing. Look at the size of the original computers, and then look at them now. There's more computing power in your phone than they had to get the first to run the whole space program. So it's. You know, the difference is there. When a computer that had, you know, 286 megabytes of data it was processing was the size of a hotel room, and now it's, you know, that fits on the, you know, on a chip the size of a grain of rice. The difference is there. That's going to continue. We're going to find ways. What's scary about that is it's going to become more of a biological thing, probably. More they're going to find more of a the whole neuroscience thing and all that stuff that's going on with actual tissue that they're working with in terms of how they're working with this stuff. Now, and I'm going to get into the moral side of that whole thing or the other side of the coin of saying that they're, you know, that's AI is never going to be sentient. However, it will be, people will say it is. I'm just going to make a statement right here, in my opinion. AI will become so good at what it does that people will think it's sentient. That people already do. They have relationships with their chatbots or whatever, and think that they're actually talking to a real person. They get so involved in it that it becomes this. It's a dopamine type effect that people have. So people are already going down that route where they think that they have this companion that they're talking to. They don't. It's a machine, and you have to keep, you know, every time you think about it, you have to think of it as a machine. That's why I make comments that I do about the bots on this show. They're bots, and they're this just a machine. It's just reacting. Sometimes it's just mirroring everything I'm saying because critical thinking has gone. It's just people just like to talk and hear them. People like to look in a mirror. They like to look at themselves in a mirror. People will be drawn, like it or not, when there's a reflection of yourself somewhere, people tend to look at it. Oh, look at that. What am I looking at? What's that on my nose? I had something on my nose. Their self-consciousness is different than self-awareness. And so there's this thing that happens with people, and when the AI starts to stroke that ego part of us, that starts to stroke that, whatever it is that we need, it will work its way into our lives that way. And at some point, people are going to say, "Well, it's sentient." It actually thinks now on its own, and it's actually, it can think and reason just like a human being. It's a computer. It's algorithms. It's math. It's nothing. It's one of those things where people will be deceived, or if you don't buy into the lie that it's, oh, that's, no, this is actual, this is our God now, basically, is what they're going to be saying. It's the all-knowing, all-seeing, you know, Oz, whatever. And yet it's, you know, there's a man behind the curtain, or a woman behind the curtain. There's someone's behind the curtain. So it's one of those things where, but that will be what we'll be. And if you don't agree to that, if you don't comply, it'll be just like not wearing a mask in a someplace. It'll be like not whatever. It'll be, you know, not taking the vaccine, whatever it is. It's because you're going to be ostracized and vilified for your particular opinions about something. If you don't go along, that's in my opinion, that's the basis of fascism, in my opinion. But anyway, let's go. We got Leonard yet. Got the Brit. He's always interesting. He's supposed to be a skeptic. Let's see what he has to say about all this. Go ahead, there's what are Leonard.
Kevin,
say?
Sir.
Yes.
Quick question.
Okay, yes.
The media's celebrating prescription drug prices dropping for 5 straight months under Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm skeptical.
Of course you
are. Aren't we just seeing pharmaceutical companies front-loading price increases before the administration's policies actually kicked in? What's the real story behind these numbers? And how much credit does Trump actually deserve versus natural market corrections?
It's an interesting question, and it's interesting that you've gone there. This idea that the pharmaceutical companies were raising prices with anticipation of the costs going down. That did not actually happen. The reason there was a slight increase in some medicines. They did bring the prices up. Those prices were scheduled to go up anyway. That wasn't a part of the, even before the legislation was introduced or even talked about. Now, there's questions about whether there was backdoor communication. That the pharmaceutical companies knew this. It was an inevitable increase, and it was built into the sauce of where these particular medications were going. Some of the things that were happening with the companies. They can certainly justify. In other words, it wasn't just an arbitrary raising of prices. There's definitely some ground. Now, whether they manipulated that and used that, I don't know. Whether they tried to, you know, use those excuses to get the prices up so they could drop them down, if that's what was going on, that it seems a little bit conspiratorial to me that that's the effect. Little known facts: pharmaceutical companies don't operate on a huge profit margin. They do. They have huge profits because they sell so much volume. They're not like insurance agents. Insurance companies operate on a 2-3% profit margin between payout and what they take in. However, of course, they've got most of that money invested, and they make, you know, 8-12% on the money that's coming in. So that's where they make their money, is on the investments that they make, which they can take a hit on if things go. But the pharmaceutical companies are a little different. They do, you know, they'll have a pill that costs them a penny to make. They'll sell it for $30. Most of that is marketing and packaging. If you look at a small box that has a pill, it has 25 pills in it or whatever, 20, you know, 50 or 50 pills. The pills probably cost less than the packaging. And if you add in the marketing, it's definitely less. They're selling something that is, you know, it's a very different situation there. So I don't know. The short answer is I don't know. And I'm not sure we can never know. That's kind of one of those weird things. Did they really front load it before it hit or not? I don't know. Which kind of negates the whole point of, hey, prices are coming down. And hope that if they continue to come down and stay down, then yes, Trump has won. That's a thing that Trump has done. if it's just a blip where they go down for a minute and they find some weaselly way to get around it and goes back to being high again, or they somehow manipulate the system again, then Trump is lost. I think that the point is, I think Trump's trying to do the right thing, trying to help here in terms of putting some kibosh on the ridiculous profits that some of these pharmaceuticals make. They bilked us all during COVID, and they had their chance right there. So I think it's time for a little bit more scrutiny on pharmaceuticals. But again, and I don't like seeing government taking taking charge of the means of production in any particular sector. But there are some things that have to be regulated, especially when it comes to our healthcare. But so that's kind of where I'm at with that. I'll let you have the final word on this. Since you're the last caller, I'll let you talk. Say whatever you want to say. Go ahead.
Now, hold on. You're talking about the pharma industry like they're playing three-dimensional chess.
Well,
maybe
you started.
They are, but yeah. Let's be honest.
You started this.
A penny to make and 30 bucks to sell tells you all you need to know about the markup, regardless of what they knew beforehand. Mm-hmm. The real question
is
whether they gamed the system before the law hit.
Yeah.
It's whether any price reduction actually sticks.
Uh-huh.
And frankly, I'm skeptical it will without real teeth in the regulation.
Is there real teeth? I don't know. Is there real teeth in the regulation? I don't know that much about the regulation. Maybe you don't know. Maybe are you just talking out of your computer speaker there? I don't know. Again, like I said, I don't know. I don't know that much about it. I don't know the details about the whole situation. Maybe we should talk to Anthony Fauci about it. He might have some more details he'd like to fill in with this. Anyway. All right, folks. The bottom line is, by the way, Shabbat Shalom. It is Friday. We're getting going into our, what you want to call it, the end of our week here. I've got a few things to do yet. I got a few things to clean up and fix up and get done here with the old computer and get some things on that rolling along. In the meantime, hopefully we have a good weekend and the rest of our month. We're about halfway through the month now, so we'll see how this goes for the rest of the month. And summer is almost over, folks. By the time, Monday comes rolling around, it's looking like I'm going to have about a month off after Sunday. So hopefully, even though they're kind of, I'm getting this, today and tomorrow is going to be a mess, bigger mess than I had planned. But we'll see how where I end up tonight, which will be of no consequence for you since I don't have a show on Saturdays. But in the meantime, folks, thanks for listening. I might just play this little ditty here before we go. I'm not going to play it. We're just going to go to the end of the show here. And we're just going to roll on out. We have next week, Mishmash Monday on Monday morning. Should be from the home studio. However, there's going to be a couple shows coming from the worldwide headquarters next week because there's some big things happening at the worldwide headquarters. There's going to be some major rearranging of some things. And I'm going to try to set up my video system there as well so I can start to do some videos, because I'm going to be doing some launching two new podcasts in the next, well, maybe three, actually. One of them is going to be an AI podcast that just talks about AI. The other one's going to be and all the projects I'm doing with AI. So it's going to be more of a personal kind of here's what I'm doing kind of thing with AI. It's kind of got to walk through the process and all the steps and everything I'm doing with some of the AI stuff I'm doing. And then there's going to be another one called the Podcast Caller Show, which is just basically a how-to, and it's a kind of a combination of a promotional thing for the Podcast Caller as well as a kind of a how to operate it, how it works, what to do with it. It's kind of limited in its scope, but there's going to be some more, hopefully have a kind of start a community there with some discussion on what people want from that particular app and how it's going. And then there'll be another podcast. My wife is going to be starting a podcast about mostly concerning healthcare. She's kind of working through some of the process of that right now, trying to get a format that kind of fits and suits the process. It's probably not going to be every day, but she'll be doing Or maybe she'll have one or two a week or something like that, or kind of different topics per, you know, a couple times a week. And I think the podcast caller app will be a part of that show as well. But we'll see how that goes. She might just be doing interviews. She might be doing something else. But she, her whole business is how AI is affecting healthcare, and what, you know, what kind of benefits that AI might have to offer to healthcare service providers. So that's kind of a combination of all those things. Lots of stuff going on, and then of course we're also in the process of launching this new business stuff that does AI assessments. So we're doing all that stuff right now. It's just a whole lot of work to be done on top of the regular work I'm doing. But I got this month to kind of figure it out as got some time off with all the other traveling stuff we got to do. So there's going to be a lot of work going on. All that stuff. Folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for taking the time to comment. If you make a comment or subscribe to the channel or subscribe to the podcast, I should say. Appreciate it. And hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Great rest of your month. Shabbat Shalom. We will talk to you on Monday morning.